Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm here with Josh Ulswich. Hey, Josh.
Mr. Brian. It's good to be here.
It is great to be with you. The King and Keijan gang is here. You played it. You lived it. You rocked it.
Literally lived it.
I mean, what better could you hope for than not only calling for it, but then actually trading it?
Is there any reason why people wonder why I have the settings that I have for this indicator? You saw it happen yesterday, you know? This is out of my hands. This is just some voodoo that I pay attention to, right?
Yeah, trend. You know, it's funny. I've seen the macro narratives like, Bitcoin's down whatever percent. Is the party over? But when you look at trend following strategies, it was pure mean reversion. And, you know, I was curious if we would hit below 30K. We didn't on the first iteration down, but the second one got through. There were clearly like spot exchange buys that were hitting like limit buys just above 30K. And that gave us the initial bounce. But then when we spiked down on the new daily, I think Coinbase got as low as like 28.7 or so. And right there at 29.1 was the Keijan, which is your primary high time frame bull market pullback buy the dip type of area. That's what we got. So if we're to maintain momentum, then that means the bottom is in there, right?
Ideally, yes. You know, I was looking at this as one does after it happens, as far as what have the prior like Keijan bounces looked like. The past two most recent ones weren't really Keijan bounces at all. The one in February, March was, you know, pre-COVID stuff. So that one didn't live very long. The ones before that don't look super great either. I mean, this one, which was a Bitstamp shenanigans, I think, on May 17th, 2019, is probably the best example of what you'd hope for. Just a massive wick, a stab on that level, and then just continuation from there.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's what we have here, honestly. It looks more like, just because it's forming this massive like triangular consolidation like it did in mid-2019. You know, you see this type of thing when we're near the top, certainly mid-2019, we saw it at the end of 2017 in December. We saw it in the Bitfinex hack, pre-Bitfinex hack, sorry, that was June 2016. These types of mean reversions. I still feel like it's a good buy here.
I think it's a great buy here. We could go, you know, if you're playing, if you extrapolate Keijan out to longer time frames, like we could even go to the weekly. We hit it a few times in 2017, but that was, I mean, like total bottom on those. And usually after your first big dip, it spent like several weeks chopping or consolidating before it would break down again to hit that weekly Keijan. And I mean, one of those was the Bcash fork, which was probably the greatest attack on Bitcoin ever. And they're pretty severe events then, and there's no guarantee in a bull market that you have to hit the weekly Keijan until the market's like really tired. So that would put us at like 23K, which we've talked about as a level on this podcast as could go to, but that is a much more severe total percentage drawdown. So my personal guess is that this was it for now, and then as the weekly Keijan catches up, and you know, if it's a grind up for a bit, the next big dip, maybe it'll catch the weekly Keijan. But I have a hard time believing from a percentage standpoint we would go to 23K, because it would be like 45% down from the top on this move, and I think there's too much hype in the market for that to be the case this time. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, Sailor bought 10 million. And
yeah, institutions, once they open, are the ones stepping in to buy that dip.
And the other thing, comparing to 2017, it's always funny how it happens. All the FUD just lines up with the price, right?
That's great.
We had just like nonstop barrage of Gatling gun of FUD. It was like yelling, saying random stuff. And then like to cap it all off, it was the double spend that wasn't.
That was the worst one because it was like, it wasn't a double spend. It wasn't, the argument for what they said was not even accurate. It was just pretty pathetic all around.
Yeah, I must have been sleeping or something when it happened, but I woke up, read like Antonopoulos, what he said. And I was like, oh, okay. Like it's just the blockchain being the blockchain. And then CSW doing whatever CSW does with his time.
He was like, I caused this, and he's such a, screw him. I don't even want to talk about him. We're not wasting our breath with him.
I don't either, but it's funny how that stuff lines up, right? And so just like mirroring 2017, 2016, again, we had Bitfinex hack 2016. We had China bans Bitcoin in January 2017. March 2017, we had the coin ETF getting denied. And then after that, it was Bcash, SegWit2x, and then off to the races to 20K. But we need this stuff to solidify the pullback. And I think you're right about the 23K stuff. I don't think the market has that in it. I mean, look how alts have bounced so insanely well. Most of them are above where they were yesterday.
Yeah.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
I think it does insanity. Make sense because there was a combination of people that wanted in the first place and then people that saw deals or doubled down and then capitulation, kind of the first major capitulation in this DeFi swing in particular, just caused for a like as soon as people realized that, you know, the dip was over, bottom, local bottom at least was in, it was game on and they just went ham. So the low liquidity works both ways.
I think I feel like the books must have been thin on the way down and thinner on the way up because of the way that bounced.
I can confirm that the books were thin on the way down. Okay. Some of these coins, especially when they have liquidity pools, but even the ones on Binance and stuff, you know, you're splitting your liquidity between centralized exchanges and DEXs. So that's part of it. And there's just not as many coins on the books on either direction. And stuff can disappear from the liquidity pools pretty quickly if it's not a hyper liquid thing. This is the DeFi perpetual index. So it's like a basket of, I don't know, some number of DeFi coins that Sam put together for FTX relative to Bitcoin. So if you look at these dailies, it almost doesn't look like a real panic except for percentage-wise, you know, Bitcoin went down 20% top to bottom on the day. These DeFi coins went down 10% to Bitcoin. So most of these were down like 30%. And now today they've fully engulfed them to the upside. And it looks like just party on, you know. I mean, it's really, really intense when you look at some of these moves against the dollar. Aave is one of the craziest ones I've seen so far, like when I look at just the dollar chart. It broke down 18% on the body, hit the 20-day moving average, and then, I mean, one of my buddies, Pat, said it looks like it's allergic to the 20-day, how fast it ran away from it. Now it's right back up to the highs at 200. And what's amazing to me is these all look prime now to do price discovery. You know, they all had a couple days of consolidation and the dip and the recovery, and now they look like they're just ready to go off to the races. And I think they were prepared to do that, and they were waiting on Bitcoin to do something on the smaller consolidation. And then now that it's recovered after breaking down from that consolidation, it now seems like, you know, there's room, you know, like it seems like there will be some defense on the downside, and then it's unlikely that we're just going to bust up in Bitcoin on the top side. And that is this chop that could last into February and therefore offers a license to DeFi and altcoins to continue the run, which has been my theory for what could happen since the end of the year. And it seems to be playing out so far.
A lot of lines on that chart. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, the lines are trying to figure out what's this pattern going to be. So I had this smaller triangle, which I always envisioned was not going to be real. and I was trying to figure out what would the lower line be. It went lower than my line was. I had it tagging maybe 31K or something. So now I've just redrawn it, and I'm trying to figure out, like, are we going to make a falling wedge? Are we going to do, like, some really long, like, rectangular shape? I don't know. But I do think that no matter what, this is setting up for some significantly broader consolidation for Bitcoin, of probably not breaking 42K to the top side, probably not, you know, making significant lower lows to the downside. And therefore, I think money, I'm going to treat it like reaccumulation on Bitcoin personally, by people that are only interested in Bitcoin, which is most of our institutional folks. And then an excuse for more crypto native whales to send money to Momentum, which is clearly in the hands of the DeFi landscape.
Yeah, I mean, that 29 level had to bounce, and BTC had, and it did so far. And BTC have been hammered way harder than this other stuff. I mean, ETH is back at 1250. It's like it's like nothing ever happened, right? Link is at like what, 22 something or whatever. It's absolute madness.
Yeah.
The problem I still have with ETH, I will continue to have this problem until we're out of this pitchfork, is I get nervous that it's up here.
Because
no matter how you want to draw this, it is far away from home right now. Home being the midline here. But I will say I can finally breathe a sigh of relief that we got our daily Kijun touch, which we hadn't gotten since the breakout. So it's like, okay, I can finally feel comfortable to use leverage again, to get levered up, to really send it home as far as my positioning, because I did not want to get trapped up here before the breakdown. And something else I'm watching is this 4-hour cloud, which at this point has completely reset itself. So if we get above this 4-hour cloud again, you know, I'm ready for 50K at that point.
Yeah. Do you remember when there was a time in the previous bull market, and we were like, basically sometimes, like, once the mid time frame cloud goes negative, like goes bearish, it's basically telling us that's the bottom signal, because it's probably coinciding with support on like the daily or the weekly cloud. Now,
originally I wanted to be short on this 4-hour breakdown. I was asleep when it happened. I didn't have stop limits set, whatever. I wanted to be short from there to the Kijun, because that was the trade. But go ahead.
To continue on the cloud concept education, now that twist offers a often convenient place for price to pierce through, because essentially it's like less in the way of like moving through the cloud. So when you see those big fat clouds, the chances of getting rejected off of them are higher. And then once you get in them, the chances of moving through them completely is greater. When you have these thinner clouds, it gives you the ability. It's just eerie the way, this is one of the fun things about Ichimoku, it tends to like to pierce through those twists.
It does, which is weird.
I learned that from someone named Josh Olswich.
It's weird. I can't explain that.
It's just one of those caveats. If you're a momentum trader using Ichimoku, that tends to happen.
Something with the timing that's still a bit weird is that we are a week off of the, I can't edit this right now. We're a week off of the CME and futures options rollover stuff. So
on Bitcoin, I think,
on BTC. So I think there's another week of volatility, like heavy ranging stuff, at least until after the month is over.
And then the Ethereum CME stuff opens up February 8th, which is, I have that marked on my chart as, like, part of me thinks it's going to chop and wait to make price expiration until CME opens up.
Yeah, just a reminder how, you know, BTC started at CME. It was the literal top. So wouldn't that be funny if ETH is the literal top when CME opens?
I personally don't think that'll be the case. I don't either, but...
Yeah. You know, it's funny how it lines up like that.
Certainly something we're going to want to watch. I mean, if you look at on a chart, let's see, February 8th is, you know, this could certainly pattern out, or whatever you want to call it, until then. Like, it's not that much distance. And it would be painful consolidation. Like, everybody would be like, oh my gosh, when is this move going to occur? You know? But you can see how this, I mean, look at this. This is like some kind of,
Well, look how consolidated before this move. I didn't think this move was even going to happen. Before, what was it?
I'm looking at your monthly chart.
No, somebody showed me this BTC monthly chart on Linear, yeah. And I threw up in my mouth a little bit.
It's a little terrifying.
It doesn't look great, folks. I'm not gonna lie.
I feel like it's one of those where it just means. I mean, when I said the top is in for the quarter, and then I revised to January, it could be for the quarter. Like, it could take some time to cool off after that. You know, it's not the end of the world. But I think because of the momentum of Bitcoin, it's probably only like a month. But though you have a bearish candle, you can still have another monthly candle that like disobeys the one. Like, one monthly candle is hard to judge.
I agree. But, you know, where we stand here, it's not looking amazing. What I was saying with ETH is this, when this like chop was going on, I wasn't even sure the rest of this was going to happen. So I feel like we're sort of in that same situation. And we've had these chops on ETH so many times.
Yeah. And what we're saying now, like, it's worth saying that one at the very top is also the like a really pathetic all-time high.
There was no price discovery, really.
No, I mean, it went up another like $30 or something. I have the line drawn on mine where it broke that all-time high. I didn't get a close. So, you know, some people would say it's a swing failure pattern, and now it's just a bearish retest, and this is going to break down to $600, you know?
I would love that. I would so love that.
I know you would love that. I do not think that matches with the the animal spirits of the market, you know?
The Marins and whatnot?
Not even that. Just the desire... The froth of speculative greed can carry.
Oh, ETH isn't even spec at this point. It's just it's fees for your DeFi spec. The DeFi spec is so strong, it is just hoovering up all the ETH for fees. And the mining spec is so strong on ETH that they're hoovering up all the GPUs.
Yeah,
it's insane.
Yeah,
it's absolutely insane.
So I reject the. Swing failure breakdown 50% down move. It's just I believe there are too many buyers for that. The only thing that could do that to me is if Bitcoin totally breaks down attached to a dollar, like the dollar index pump attached to legacy breaking down in a big way. In that case, yeah, 600, because the larger market movements are taking over. If ETH and DeFi and all that is allowed to operate on its own, then I believe it'll be very frothy. You'll get price discovery, and we will experience $2,000 plus Ethereum over the course of the next month. That's my thoughts. Basically, I think it'll make that move right around CME's open. And then spend the month of February going ham. And the party ends sometime in February, rotates to BTC, alts get smoked, BTC makes its move in late Q1. Is that too easy?
I don't like the timetable, but sure.
You don't like the timetable from a seasonality perspective, right?
So Q1 for BTC has been negative 12% on average since 2014. So you can't really expect more than 10% out of BTC, I think, this quarter, like conservatively, even non-conservatively. It just taxes, whatever reason, you know, pick your poison.
Sell in April.
Buy in May? No. What's Q1?
Sell in May and go away.
Buy in March, sell in May and go away. And I don't know, maybe.
But Q1 has historically been the best quarter for Ethereum.
Has it?
Didn't you say that? I think that was a stat you gave me at some point.
I think somebody told me that ETH BTC does well in Q1.
Okay, well, that's good enough for me. I'm looking to stack Bitcoin, so whatever.
Which is what we're seeing now, I think.
Oh, yeah, let's just go ahead and go to that ETH BTC chart, because I don't know. Josh, you're our Y Coffee and expert, but ETH BTC is got some Y Coffee and vibes on it, right?
Does it? Are we looking at the same chart?
The weekly ETH BTC, where it died, looks like a perfect spring to me. And then whether it's Wyckoffian, inverse head and shoulders, higher high on the weekly, at its, if it closed right this moment on the weekly, it fulfills all of those things, all those parameters.
What is Wyckoffian about this?
And then sets a sets a target for 0.055 to the next serious resistance. So my take is these are the two moves that ETH can make relative to Bitcoin, is the elevator up to 0.055, and then consider consolidate, whatever. And if it really wants to go super silly, then your Ethereum people will be talking about 0.1 and all-time highs and all that and the flippening, and that's when I'm selling my Ethereum.
I mean, the ETH people are already nauseating. So
yeah, they were nauseated. They were talking about price discovery, like $2 over all-time high. We need to send Anthony back to prison for from tweeting. He came out for the all-time high, and then I think he has to go back until it actually hits price discovery, right?
Sure.
Anthony Sassano said he wouldn't tweet until Ethereum made an all-time high.
So I do like the inverted head and shoulders case. I think it's a bit weak as far as reality. I don't know, man. This chart's just it's such a mess. Someone's saying it's a weekly TK cross.
Yeah. I like this chart because it may still be choppy, but it's not showing death and weakness. It's combined with Bitcoin clear consolidation. So we're just giving the green light to these things. All the narratives line up really, really well in my mind, that without a legacy market breakdown where, ever all the larger forces take control, then in my mind, Ethereum with the tailwind of DeFi hype will go absolutely ballistic over the coming weeks, as it has the last few weeks. Which has been my game plan and will remain my game plan until Bitcoin decides to do Bitcoin things and be the king and rip faces and ruin everyone's dreams who holds their bags too long.
Okay. In a vacuum, ETH BTC looks good. I'll say it like that.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Thank you for affirming
my narrative.
But 3-day looks good on the cloud. Anything lower than the 3-day is a bit of a mess trend wise, but even that still looks good on the 2-day. Weekly, it's still got a ways. I don't know. It looks fine. Daily looks fine. I think it's way past the 5200 cross on the daily. Oh no, that just happened too. There. If you want to be bullish on anything, be bullish on the golden cross on ETHBTC.
There you go. Well, and I mean, you're allowed to be bullish on ETH versus the dollar as well. It looks totally fine in a trend following sense. I mean, it certainly looks like it could grind. My exposure is leaning towards DeFi rather than leaning towards ETH itself, even though I'm bullish ETH. I think I'm looking for the high beta move on the high beta move, I want crypto versus the dollar. I want ETH versus Bitcoin based on that ETH BTC chart. And I want DeFi versus ETH. And I'm getting triple leverage in spot holdings on my narrative of crypto good. and that allows me to make money versus the dollar, make money versus Bitcoin, make money versus Ethereum, ride the DeFi train. I'm not trying to be a galaxy brain. That's just the way I look at it.
Yeah, I can see that. It's just hard for me to be overweight ETH or overweight DeFi coins like some of us may be. That's just a tough pill to swallow for me.
Why?
I can't see giving up my sweet precious BTC,
It's been a beauty.
They've treated me well. They treated me well.
Your Bitcoins have treated you well. I've talked about this before, but I want to talk about it again because it's it's a repricing mechanism. And then I'll show you a chart that even gives that credit. If you look at the top 20 coins, Aave hit 17 and Synthetics hit 19. Other than that, only Link is in the top 10 that's really like Ethereum derivative DeFi stuff. And there's still all this other crap. Bitcoin Cash and Stellar and Bitcoin SV is number 14. EOS, Monero. No, thank you. ADA. No. No. Josh, no. Tron is number 20.
Lucy, no.
That's, yeah, my dog's being quiet today. She's being a good girl. the great repricing of the number one crypto network outside of Bitcoin is Ethereum. It's the landscape for smart contracts, compute, non-monetary stuff in crypto. And therefore, all its derivatives, its blue chip derivatives, are what should be up alongside it. We're starting to see it as they enter the top 20. Last time I ranted about this, they were maybe 25 to 30. We're going to see a handful of them get higher. I'm like top 10. And we're going to see a whole bunch start to displace stuff that's in the top 50. I want to see 40% or more of the top 50 be DeFi things. Right now, if you look at them from a relative market cap standpoint, there's plenty of space for them to continue to move up. A good example of one, this is just, and you can see it on the chart, is Sushi. So I've made a comparison this week, and I want to get your thoughts on it. To me, I think Sushi has a lot going for it, and it makes me feel like Sushi is DeFi's version of Binance, whereas Uni is DeFi's version of Coinbase. Sushi's moving fast. They're pulling a lot of volume. They're locking a lot of dollars in liquidity. They're adding a lot of new features. They have tons of stuff going on. And I think what we've seen is the USD chart in particular just riding a constant, fast moving average up, not even bothering to pattern out on like a daily time frame, because it's purely playing catch up, because it's still like under $1 billion, whereas Uniswap is it's 1.7 billion fully diluted. Uniswap's 8.8 billion. And so for Sushi to become half of a Uniswap, it's still got multiples left in it as a relative basis. And I think what we're seeing is something like that just is mispriced. It's just purely mispriced. And I look at it on every chart. I mean, look at the BTC chart is just an absolute thing of beauty. And I see a case for Sushi and other projects like it to where they still have a mispricing. And I think we'll see all-time highs versus Bitcoin on projects like this. But that's a really good example of one that's liquid. It's a large cap, but it's not large enough. And we're going to see the continued repricing of some like these. Because when this was down here below, at the lows, people just thought it was a total scam. But what we're seeing is...
Well, I still think it's a total scam.
But what we're seeing is... something that you may not trust, which, you felt this way about Binance. It hasn't prevented the success of Binance, right? There's a ton of development. There's a ton of attention. There's a ton of money. There's a ton of volume. That's what's going to matter to price the tokens. And Sushi has a better revenue model to token holders and liquidity providers than Uni does. But it's 20% or whatever of Uni's market cap. Those are the types of arguments that I think we can look at in order to determine, is there still room in this market? And that's why I think there is. And that's why how I'm looking at them when I'm trying to figure out what's the opportunity for some of these, because it's just a straight up the flippening of the coin rankings has to occur, and therefore we will see it occur. So the outpacing will be on DeFi over any of these legacy chains. And then within DeFi, it'll go towards the ones that are moving fast and pulling all this attention and activity over the ones that are moving slower.
I mean, I think that's great when the market's hot, but...
And the market is hot. That's what I'm saying. You take advantage when the market's hot.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing, we always talk about market cap I don't know why in God's name we talk about market cap, but I agree with you that there's going to be a reshuffling, but the whole idea of a market cap table is a joke. So it doesn't really matter to me. It's irrelevant. I know in my head which projects are worth zero, and that's all that matters to me. I reject your reality and substitute it with my own. But
the price that's on the chart is therefore going to reflect in the market cap itself.
The price on the chart is going to reflect in the market cap.
Yeah. The number goes up, market cap goes up.
Yes.
You look at, you do a comparative analysis between multiple coins, and the easiest thing to fall on is market cap or fully diluted market cap. And
this is why I don't want to bother picking one or five. Just like give me a basket of 10.
I am glad you brought this up because it's what I wanted to talk about. Am I allowed to talk about this now?
You can talk about whatever you want, man.
Okay.
But yeah, that's because for me, I'm just like, let me just buy it in one fell swoop. I don't care what it is, right? Like, let's get this out of my system. Let's just get it over with.
So what you're talking about, I would say, is easy mode, okay?
Right, that's what I want. I'm lazy. I want easy mode. I don't care about any of these food garbage tokens, okay?
In a tweet late last night, you know, just laying down, just bathing in the glory of the positive retrace after that meltdown. I was thinking about this, and my mind is that I shared balanced portfolios are good if you're satisfied with matching index performance, so like sector performance, but they add risk by preventing quick exits, which are difficult. And if you want to beat the index, then you need to be opinionated and concentrated in your positioning. And
yeah, we've talked about that before,
right? So I was talking to my buddy Messi, and he responded essentially like, you know, he's taking his shot on like his bags, right? And what I would like to clarify in that is that I think what I'm trying to do by being concentrated within a sector, rather than saying I want, you know, all 10 bags in this index, I'm saying I want to eliminate ranges. If you do like a performance simulation, like a Monte Carlo simulation of, you know, different traders and what they choose, I want to consider all the potential outcomes. And then if you say the index is the midline, the average outcome of, you know, relative performance is positive because of whatever, DeFi and everything going on, and, you know, you grow, then that's good. If you think that's easy mode, this is easy mode, that could be totally satisfactory for you, and you're preventing, you know, underperforming like the poor traders. What I want to do is outperform that. I want to say, what can I do to try to increase my chances of being towards the top of the simulation? And for me, in order to do that, it's by trying to be smarter than other people in the ecosystem and not just pick the 10 or whatever in the index, but pick the ones that I feel like have this blend of momentum and value and, you know, these other things that are going to give me an opportunity to be on the top range of the simulation. That's obviously a bet. That's obviously a bet on myself, right? Not rather than abiding by the market trends. There's hubris involved in this, absolutely, but it also gives me a greater potential to outperform and have, you know, the kind of life changing gains that I want, etc.
Yes,
you just think it's hubris, right? you're cool with the red line.
I think it's completely possible to do the green line. I just don't care enough. I don't want to work hard enough to shuffle all my stuff around constantly and deal with low liquidity, poor exchange stuff. Like, I don't want to think about that, right? I want to put my money on a few places, and I want to trade really well on medium leverage, right? Like, I'm satisfied with that 100%. You know, that's good enough for me because that's my strength. You know, your strength is being the green line, right?
Like, trying to be the green line, right? Yeah, there are versions of the simulation where I'm not the green line, but I'm willing to take that risk. That's my risk. And for what it's worth, you mentioned leverage. That's another way to get at some of these you know, greater performances, but most people, you are smart with leverage. Most people are not. And most people with leverage are going to put themselves right there on the bottom part of the simulation, you know?
Yeah, but trading all this low liquidity stuff is another type of leverage.
Yes, it's like a different type of leverage. You could trade just ETH and large caps, use leverage, low leverage, and with smart management of that leverage also become the green line. So there's different ways to go about this.
So as someone who knows their strength and weakness, like, I have zero issue with blending strategies and adopting some sort of index type DeFi thing and being between the green and the red line, right? Like, that's for people who are listening to this and not seeing it, just the performance of somebody versus concentrated into DeFi coins versus it's almost like active and passive management. It's like that type of conversation where it's like hyperactive management, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, that's how I personally see your trading style is
yes.
Hyperactive management.
I am on hyperactive management. There's no doubt about that. I totally admit it. Josh, I tend to overtrade a little bit.
But I don't say that in like a negative connotation. I just mean that's how I would classify it, you know?
Yeah, I do a ton of rotation and I attempt to time my trades, and it's part of my attempt to be like water, you know, to go with the market's movements. And I try to prevent some of my drawdowns that way. Sometimes, like last night, I can't, you know, like I either don't predict it or I don't prepare well enough, yada, yada. But yeah, I do more active trades. And you know what, Josh? Thankfully, I can use Matcha to make those active trades. And other people can try Matcha too, because a lot of these DeFi tokens, once they get on the centralized exchanges, now recently we've seen massive moves on all of them, but a lot of them aren't even on centralized exchanges. And even if they are on centralized exchanges, you may want to make these trades in a non-custodial manner, where you use your Ethereum or your USDC or your WBTC that's already on your wallet to make these trades. You can do that with Matcha at ledgerstatus.com/matcha. You can even set limit orders so that you can be ready to buy those dips when they occur. Unlike me last night, I did not buy any of the dips. I just rode the waves down, but I wish I could have. And if I could have, I would have done it with Matcha. But I do my rotations in these coins with Matcha. I must be putting like 90% plus of my trade volume through Matcha these days. And they carry everything I want because they pool and aggregate liquidity between SushiSwap and Uniswap and Balancer and the 0x protocol. And in fact, a token that I've been picking up quite a bit of, it's not on Uniswap, so if somebody was going to look for it on Uniswap, they wouldn't even find it. It's actually only on SushiSwap. So I don't care about that because I just go to Matcha at ledgerstatus.com/matcha. Try it today. It's the best DeFi trading experience that exists. Thanks to Matcha for being a Ledger Status partner. We appreciate you guys. All right. What in the world are you looking at?
Looking at ZRX.
Oh, yeah.
You can't talk about Matcha without talking about ZRX.
This is, yeah, this is not to shill their token for shilling their token. This is just talking about their token. Josh may blast it here. I have no idea. Well, it has nothing to do with our partnership.
No, it doesn't. But I just did an article for BNC on ZRX. And it's interesting how 35 cents went from the ceiling to the floor.
In like a day?
The chart still looks not great to me, but you know, it might be a buy and hold. I don't know. It's not for me. The ZRX BTC pair looks disastrous.
From
memory,
there's a specific look on the ZRX BTC chart that I've been interested in. It's funny that we're talking about ZRX right after doing a matcha roll. That's okay.
Well, somebody was asking about ZRX, so yeah. Here we are.
All right. So there's a couple of things I want to flip to though on.
Yeah, we can get to that. But I was saying to you earlier today that there was a bullish div on this. There's actually a bullish div on a lot of BTC pairs right now, very similar to this, which is, again, why I like Q2. This is setting up for a Q2 Kumo breakout. So just keep that in mind. But go ahead.
On those BTC pairs?
Yeah, on any of these BTC pairs you look at that have a cloud fractal that looks like this with a bullish divergence. I mean, BNB, so I just did BNB yesterday. Look at BNB BTC.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
Very similar with
so the multi-month. So you like Q2 for our alts run, right?
Right. I like Q2 for alt seasons, Q2 for alts outperforming BTC.
Josh, you have no idea how that makes me feel.
I mean, that's just seasonality. But this
you
is
know that Antonio Banderas gif where he's just like, oh. I need to cut that out.
No, you're fine. Multi-month bull div on BNB BTC. Anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are a lot of alt charts that are set up for some sort of recovery rather soon.
I love that people think it's not alt season right now because I'm having the best trading month of my life trading only alts. So if it
you say that like we didn't just have a conversation about concentrating your bets.
Yes, they are concentrated alts. Bets. It's not
you're
an index.
Like two or three things, right?
Yeah, it's not an index, but even on an index, they're performing pretty well. I'll show that in a minute. I want to close the loop on ZRX. Yeah. I was watching the way it based and the way it was acting around the 200-day moving average. It broke above it, and that liquidity event last night was so crazy. It had a 23% down move, but went right and slammed the 200-day moving average versus USD. So it's actually really interesting to me right now, the way it's playing out. More interestingly is actually the BTC pair because I would call it decision time for ZRX. And this is a lot of alts. And this is why, like, there's another meme for this, you know, like where you show the tiny little MACD crossover and you're like, it's alt season. It's like the tiniest little blip versus BTC. That's essentially what ZRX looks like because it looks like it might have, you know, dipped below its multi-touch all-time low relative to BTC. And be using that as support. So if it's going to run, in my mind, it needs to hold this to prove that it can continue to do it relative to BTC because that's what's going to matter in crypto. And that's just a hard goal. It's hard to outperform BTC. That said...
Did I share with you that website? Like, did I beat ETH or something?
Did I beat ETH?
It shows you... I'll pull it up in a sec. But,
and honestly, with all these DeFi tokens, that's secondary too. It's like... Can you beat the dollar? Can you beat BTC? Can you beat ETH? Because you take triple leverage, it's triple risk in that sense. I showed the DeFi BTC index that I just custom drew in my charting software. This is why to me it has been alt season because it's 1, 2, 3. This is the fourth week of relative to BTC up moves. And even on using the weekly close as my basis, the DeFi index from FTX, I think, is up 69% relative to BTC while BTC's chopped. So that was my thesis. I'm up a lot of BTC relative, you know, and USD. And if it hasn't started yet, then I'm quite pleased. But also, if this is all I get, I'm still quite pleased because my timing was good enough. If it lasts multiple months, then this is going to get significantly more frothy than even I would have anticipated. All right, so what's this website that you got up?
Oh, did it beat ETH with hyphens.com. So you can check your performance against various time points, but you can see over the past 90 days,
BTC did it. Oh, gosh, look at Alpha.
Did a 2.5, ETH did a 3, and then everything else. Yeah, I mean,
I farmed Alpha right when it came out on PancakeSwap on the Binance Smart Chain, and I immediately dumped it. I have no idea how much I dumped, but I probably dumped like thousands of today's dollars worth for hundreds of those days' dollars worth. So that's kind of sad. But
so it's interesting to look at stuff like this.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously some serious outperformers, but it's funny. It's the green ones are like super outperformers, but the right side is did it beat ETH in general. So, yeah, there's a list of like, what, 20-something coins that outperformed Ethereum.
Right. So, always good to keep in mind, you know, like because you got to pay fees, you got to pay taxes if you're in the U.S. or wherever.
Yeah, the fees, the taxes, they can hurt, no doubt about it. What's the time frame that you have on there right now?
That's 90 days.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm curious of like the 14th, what's today, the 21st? My 30 days good. Because I first was saying, like, I think we were doing the warm-up innings on Christmas, around Christmas. And look at the top performer. Hey, 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 hey. So Rook has – that. This is part of my euphoria is I've been, like – I was buying Rook a lot below $100, and so it's the top performer in the last 30 days. So maybe my bias is because of a proper selection, so I'm getting a head start. If you can do that and you can compound something, then that's great. So maybe it's not alt season yet. Maybe I just got lucky and I'm in a couple of the positions that have outperformed.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't know if you got lucky, but you got smart. You know, you did whatever you needed to do. You talked to the
got witch. The job done.
Talked to the crypto witch and she gave you some answers.
The crypto witch. Oh man.
What else is going on? I don't know. I just feel like the alts bounce is just absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's tough to ignore. We'll link that website, Wrecked Trader, in the show notes, but it's Did I Beat ETH with a bunch of hyphens in it.
Did it beat ETH?
Yeah. One of the things I want to talk about, got a question about, and I think it's worth asking. So we had that recovery. Are we doing a bearish retest right now, or is it just like kind of chop land for you? Because when I look at medium time frames, this is where I would expect us to chill. Like we recovered off last night, but I don't know that we'll make like a new high right away on majors, particularly on ETH even. So I personally think we're just in a land of chop. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I'm still high on buying 29K. So for me, like as long as it holds above 29, I'm happy.
So you'll just hold that position above 29, like you're not saying I'm going to take profit on that purchase and look for lower. You're just riding it.
Yeah, so I took profit on some of it. I still have the spot positions, but I'm not going to dump it for any reason, really. The only reason you're getting rid of the 29K buy or a Keijin bounce, whatever, is because you think the trend is over, and I don't think that's the case. So I'm just waiting for the 4 hour to reset on BTC to re-margin long at this point, as far as my expectations. So yeah, this.
Yeah,
this,
but you're out of your margin longs.
Yes, this doesn't look like something that's going to be straightforward. You know,
that's kind of how I feel too. Like if I was in a margin position, this is where I would probably want to be out of it. I think the market's going to think through that in general. And then you have things like resetting funding rates and let it consolidate and do its thing.
You got the futures and options thing we talked about. We've got legacy stuff coming up with stimulus eventually getting passed.
I won't be surprised if we spend the next several days between, you know, like 31 and 35, or maybe even we'll be talking next week and it'll still be that, which all that does is because of how prime and how huge those alts bounces were. If Bitcoin stays in that range, it's just time for DeFi season to keep frothing up.
Does it slow down or does it just keep going?
DeFi season?
Yeah.
I think all the majors are ready to go to highs.
Like, it's like nonstop.
Yeah, I think that move last night was just a massive spring. Like if I look at Aave, you know, we looked at BTC just there and it was struggling underneath the prior consolidation. When I look at something like Aave, it cleared it and it looks like it's just ready to keep going. The daily is like fully engulfed yesterday's. What are those called? Like a harami candle? I call them like a seppuku. So is that how you pronounce that?
What?
Seppuku? Seppuku? I don't know the Japanese suicide. That's
seppuku.
Seppuku. Thank you. Sorry. Please excuse my illiterate Alabama-ness. Yeah, you know, there's like massive just punishment candles. And it completely engulfed it today. That's not. It could consolidate a little, like maybe tomorrow is one of those tiny little dojis or something. But I think these are just going to go slam into price exploration, especially going into the weekend, losing the you know, the limitations of the legacy markets being open. Something like Aave just looks freaking incredible to me versus BTC. It just cleared the 0.618 between its BTC relative all-time high and the lows of November. And from where I called out the pennant breakout on something like Aave, it's a 90% move to its all-time high. I think it's going to the all-time high versus BTC. And then the measured move would be 0.014 versus BTC. And that would mark a 235% move from the breakout. And from, let's say you bought it right now, that would still mark another 150% for something like Aave. Versus BTC, let's say BTC is the same price. Let's measure out 150% for Aave from here. This is going to put us at $500, I'm pretty sure. 150, lo and behold, that is our $500 target. So that's my galaxy brain math.
Is that so?
The measured move on Aave relative to BTC's breakout and price exploration into all-time high, if Bitcoin doesn't change prices, that would put Aave to $500 each. And that was my Shopify-esque breakout, slam, bam, thank you, ma'am, DeFi season.
What was that, 2.5 from here?
That's a little over 2x from here.
Okay, I'll believe what I see.
Hey, man, I'm just looking one at thing, charts. I may have to change my tune. But I am gigabool until proven otherwise.
I mean, if the Ponzi that is known as DOT can sit at highs like it is,
yeah,
it's not going down.
DOT's
folks.
Move is insane, it's such a large cap. They're in such huge profit. It's amazing. It's unreal. It's unbelievable.
There's clearly some forces at work here and that aren't natural.
Compared to Aave, like, what is the – I mean, they're going to, like, flip everything. Polkadot's a $17 billion fully diluted valuation currently. $3 billion current. So, like, what's that, like 20% of the supply that's out?
Who knows, man?
It's number four behind Tether, Ethereum, and Bitcoin on the market cap chart on CoinGecko.
Who the heck knows?
So,
one last thing I'll say is about the USDC prints we're seeing and just stablecoin prints in general lately. Like, I think we saw 75 million USDC printed today.
Yeah.
And to me, that's incredibly bullish. It's either people onboarding into DeFi, onboarding into crypto in general, or just using it for lending. But they're coming into the ecosystem. You know, they're not printing USDC for the fun of it, right? They're printing it because people are onboarding into crypto.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I've heard a lot of Tether FUD again. It's hitting mainstream podcasts and stuff, and ugh.
Good. Yeah. Good. That's how you know we're mid cycle, right?
I know, dude.
The normies, they've heard about this thing called Tether.
We need to make some announcements, Josh. So I was listening to Macro Voices, and they had Michael, what's his face, on talking about Bitcoin last night, and I was not thrilled with his arguments. It's just very mid cycle things. And the host Eric and the co-host Patrick were talking about potential for Michael Green. Thank you, AC. They were talking about whether it was Bitcoin top. They were like pretty convinced that it was like a pretty long-term Bitcoin top, but they weren't talking about the rotation. Like, our knowledge gap of the rotation game in crypto is so much beyond theirs that they're going to be surprised when that money flows back from, you know, DeFi and alts back into Bitcoin once that consolidation's over, because they think it's just some kind of profit distribution game over again. And I couldn't be more convinced that all it is a pit stop to cool down before the next big run-up. So that's one thing. I was listening to them. The second thing is Patrick Ceresna hosts another podcast with Kevin Mir called The Market Huddle, which is one of my favorite shows. And I responded to him. I was like, man, could y'all please have me on to give a more of a bull case for crypto and Bitcoin in particular? And he said yes. So I think I'm going to be on their January 29th show, which is very much a legacy-centric show. But they do talk about Bitcoin a lot, and I'm going to be giving the case for Bitcoin and crypto and going to talk to him about some stuff. So I'm really excited about that, as long as they don't bail on me. If they bail on me, then I just, you know, threw it out too soon. But, yeah, that should be a lot of fun. And I'm hoping I can make a better case. But, yeah. It's a lot of legacy people think, you know, Bitcoin's just blowing the bubble top off again here. And I think they're going to be really surprised when it's got more legs than they anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, this is the classic 30-35% dip that we saw in 2017 over and over and over.
And reaccumulation at that. Like, even MicroStrategy bought more Bitcoin. They bought another $10 million of Bitcoin at 31K last night.
Yeah, I mean, what have you done for Bitcoin lately? You
know? Yeah.
They're here scooping up the dips, and you're just scared on the sidelines, right?
Yeah. Me?
Come on. That was not a literal you, but
you, know, you. The audience. You, dear listener. No, our listeners are very, very clever, smart, high IQ. Right.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think the narrative is really shifting. There's a lot of... By the time we've recovered like to the highs and made those initial moves, we're euphoric and other people are just starting to get involved. You know, like I've got, you know, whether it's friends or neighbors or whatever, they're talking to me and like, hey, I'm interested. But those are your dip buyers, be it retail or institutional. They're paying attention and they're interested. And I, It's that time, but it's easy to get shaken out early. I could end up getting shaken out early before this is all said and done because these targets are really high. You know,
they are really high. The multiples are many and several. Yeah, just don't lose it all. That's all I gotta tell people. Don't lose it all.
Be careful. Go slow. Stay humble. That goes for all of us, myself included. That's it. We're sitting at 57 minutes, Josh. So why don't we?
That's all I got for this one.
That's all I got. There was one more thing. Last week I talked about how I wanted to do the dance with dominance, and then I didn't make that the show title, but it was obviously the best show title. Missed opportunity. Nevertheless, there was something else I was supposed to make fun of myself about. Oh, I didn't even talk about the fact that I went and had drinks with Crypto Messiah, my good buddy. Because Nick Kaur and Josh McGruff were coming through town, and we had declared we will never have drinks again during a bull market because we called the top in January 2018. So we joked about how it was the top, and that was literally when everything went down 20%. So, like, me and him, like, we're banned from being able to get together ever again.
Yeah, I agree. Never.
Never again. That's all we got. Thanks for being here, y'all. We will be here a little bit for the after show to answer a couple of more questions or if you have like some specific coins that you want to talk about. We appreciate you. We appreciate everybody joining us. Have a great day. Thanks so much to Matcha for being our partner for this episode and all episodes of LedgerCast. Go to ledgerstatus.com/matcha to trade with Matcha today in a non-custodial manner. Get yourself in some DeFi action. See you later.
Just run dry.